Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Beth Fertig, and for Brian Lehrer, we're going to move away from talking about the politics of education right now. For the next 20 minutes or so, we're going to delve just a little into whether the Bloomberg administration has really improved the schools. Last week, the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School published a report about small high schools in particular. These schools have been a big part of the mayor's push to reform the city schools because a lot of failing large high schools were replaced by the smaller schools. Joining me now to discuss the report is its editor, Clara Hempel. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We're also joined on the phone by John Thomases. He's a chief academic officer at the city's Department of Education who's been working on small schools. Good morning, John.
Good morning. It is Josh Thomases.
Josh, I'm sorry about that.
That's fine.
And just to mix it up a little more, we're going to speak with Daisy Avitia of the New York Immigration Coalition. She's been tracking the performance of English language learners in the city schools, and she's contributed to a new book called New York City Schools Under Bloomberg and Klein, What Parents, Teachers, and Policymakers Need to Know. The book is very critical of the administration. Welcome, Daisy.
Welcome.
And before we get to you and the English language learners, let's start with the small schools report, which came out last week. Clara Hempel, you and a team of researchers spent the past year and a half looking at the explosion of small high schools in New York City and their effect on the school system overall. Tell us what you found.
I'm a big fan of the small schools. I have been for a long time. The Bloomberg administration has created about 200 of them, and I think that they give opportunities to thousands of kids who might otherwise have dropped out of high school completely. What we discovered, though, is that there was what we call collateral damage. What the administration tried to do was make new small schools without building a lot of buildings, new buildings. They put five or six new small schools in the old big school buildings. What that meant is that they had to shrink the enrollment at the buildings that were being, old buildings, and then that caused overcrowding at the other buildings. That is, the kids had to go someplace. And it wasn't just overcrowding at the remaining large schools. There was also disorder, and attendance went down, and the graduation rates went down.
But is that really a representative sample? Because as I understand, you looked at 26 of 34 large high schools in Brooklyn, Manhattan, and the Bronx that saw these greater enrollments once the small schools opened. That's not all the schools.
No, I think in Queens and Staten Island, there wasn't this collateral damage. I think those large schools stayed pretty even, and they did fine. What we looked at was the remaining large schools in the neighborhoods in which the small schools were created. That's mostly the Bronx, Manhattan, and Brooklyn.
Okay. And one thing that the chancellor pointed out last week, and Josh Thomas is from the Department of Ed, I hope you can contribute on this, is that the chancellor and the DOE were saying that actual enrollment in high schools, I believe, was going up. So is it really fair to blame this on the creation of small high schools?
There are a lot of factors involved, and it's true that the enrollment went up in the first couple of years of this administration. The enrollment has stayed steady, though, for the past 4 or 5 years.
Josh Thomases?
Well, first I'd like to say that we're gratified by the report. It found the successes and made a set of recommendations around the work that remains left to be done, having significantly moved the graduation rate in the city after it had been historically stagnant. We're pleased by the work we've done and agree that there's plenty more left to do. I think part of the challenge around the issue of the collateral damage is first what Ms. Hempel pointed out, the fact that about 10 to 15,000 more students had entered the school system in the early parts of this decade. The second part of the challenge is that the schools that were closed and replaced with the newer small schools were the places that had, in the prior decade, essentially been warehouses to send the children that nobody else wanted to teach. And part of the determination of this chancellor was that all schools should be prepared to teach all students and to make sure that there was no set of schools that were receiving all of the students that nobody wanted, and rather recreating organizations and schools that would be able to serve a much wider range of students.
But was there a collateral damage type of effect, as Clara Hempel is saying, in that the large schools, were they hit disproportionately because they grew and their attendance rates and graduation rates started to drop as a result?
Our numbers would dispute that. What I would say is that certainly the people who they interviewed for the report experienced that. That is, that there were a group of schools, particularly in the parts of the city we're talking about, that did not serve large numbers of students who were coming in underprepared. And that part of the enrollment process in the city and part of the changes was to say that those schools need to serve a wider range. At the beginning of this administration, about half of the students in the city were coming into high schools underprepared. And there were schools like Vander Childs High School in the Bronx that were serving almost 80% of their students coming in underprepared, and that there were other schools in similar parts of the city that were having less than 20% of those students underprepared. And I think part of the evening out is the challenge that the people that Clara Hempel and her team spoke to is what they were speaking to. I think the reality is that we have a city where it's becoming better and better, and the test scores in middle school that just came out speak to this. But we had a city where lots of students were arriving in high school not ready for high school courses. And we need to think about how we design high schools to make sure that all of those students, regardless of how they come in, have a shot at achieving the kind of work necessary to be ready for post-secondary success.
Right. And you both of you talk about equity as being the main goal of this high school system. So, Clara, you said that graduation rates and attendance actually, while rising initially in the small new high schools, then started to drop at the same time that you saw attendance and graduation rates falling in the larger schools. So these students were sort of spread out, the failing students, the kids that were previously warehoused in failing schools. Was this because they were spread out to all the schools, to the small schools and the large schools?
Mr. Thomas is correct that the graduation rates overall citywide are increasing, and we think that's important to notice. What we looked at with the small schools versus the remaining large schools is that they made some schools better, but the price of that was making other schools worse. And in terms of equity, Mr. Thomas is correct that there are plenty of struggling kids to go around. There were probably nothing but struggling kids at some of the old big schools like Evander Childs. Some of those struggling kids were spread out a little bit more. What happened for the kids in the small schools is I think things got a lot better. But what happened for kids in the large schools, remaining schools, is that things got worse, and that some of those kids were having commutes of up to 90 minutes.
Do you see that changing now, though, as we're going to get the latest graduation rates today from the state? But do you agree with him that as the students are coming to high school better prepared, that this is less of an issue?
I certainly hope that they're coming to school better prepared, but our experience is that a lot of kids are coming into high school with third, fourth, fifth grade reading levels. That's not all of them by any means, but in the at-risk populations we're talking about, there's really very poor preparation in K-8.
I'm Beth Fertig, filling in for Brian Lehrer, and my guest is Clara Hempel, who edited this report on small schools that was published by The New School. We also are going to get to Daisy Avitia very soon of the Immigration Coalition, and we have Josh Thomases from the Department of Education. I do want to reach out to parents in our listening audience. If you are a parent of a city high school student and you've had any experience with the small schools or a large school, if you feel like your large school has been affected in a good way or a bad way, please give us a call at 212-433-9692. We'd like to hear from you. I want to talk about the application system, because this was something that both the Department of Ed and the people who worked on your report, Clara, agreed was rather confusing. And you, particularly Clara, felt as though because it was very, you know, overwhelming for parents to pick a high school, and I hear this about middle schoolers too, that parents who are not as well educated perhaps may not be presented with or all the information that they need to make the best decision. And so are we seeing sort of a class breakdown in who gets into the better schools?
I want to put this into yes, it's a big problem. Applying for high school is a labyrinth. It's extremely complicated. Even college-educated English-speaking parents have a hard time with it. For immigrants, it's much worse. I do want to put it into context, however. Before this administration took over, about 34,000 kids were rejected at all their high school choices. That number is now down to about 7,500. If you're one of that 7,500, that's not much comfort, but I think there is some improvement. The problem is that with 400 high school choices, almost nobody can figure out which are the good schools, which are the appropriate mm-hmm. schools. So that a lot of kids just and the other thing we found is that a lot of kids have to fill out the application without any grown-up help. So they're really applying to schools almost at random. They may say, I want a football team, and they'll apply to a school that's an hour and a half away from home just because it's a football team, because without realizing that that's inappropriate.
This is where we should probably mention your former organization, InsideSchools.org, which tracks.
Thank you. Yes, those of you who are listening who are trying to navigate the system, do let me recommend the website, www.insideschools.org.
Daisy, do you think that English language learners and their parents are particularly having a hard time navigating the school system, or are they getting the help? This administration was going to provide more translations in, you know, at least the six or seven major languages that are spoken in the city schools. Are you seeing more help for that?
Well, we've been seeing, and again, this report highlights findings from a report in 2007 where we highlighted a lot of the same obstacles, the web of obstacles that are facing English language learners, one of them being information in general about the application process. We haven't, unfortunately, we haven't seen the level of response needed to make sure that more parents are informed about their options in talking about the opportunities that ELL students have in small schools. One of the other important things that the report highlighted is that ELL students continue to have less options. When we're talking about small schools, most of the small schools that we've researched still don't have the legally mandated services, so that not only is an issue of information for parents to know that these options are available to them, but that when their children actually go into those schools, they can go in with the certainty that they're going to receive the services that they need. Unfortunately, we cannot say at this point that small schools are doing a better job at providing ESL and bilingual services for ELL students.
We just got a call from Lori in Chelsea. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi.
And do you have children in the high schools?
Yeah, I have one in ninth grade at the New York City Lab School. I have one in middle school there, and I have one that graduated from there last year. So we chose, my two older ones did get into one of the science high schools, and we chose to stay at the lab school because it's smaller, because the kids do not fly under the radar.
Now, you sound like an educated person. Did you find it a complicated process?
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, I work really hard with parents right now. I'm just one of these networking people because I've had three kids in the school. I am always talking to parents to try and help them through it.
English speaking and non-English speaking?
When at the lab school, there are many Asian parents that do not speak English, and it has been really hard for them. And now the parent coordinators in a good school like the lab school and many others, they're working to create translation and a lot of access at almost every event. We make sure there are translators there.
Okay, thank you. Josh Thomas has got to put you on the spot here for the DOE. Has the department been working, what has the department been doing to work with all of these English language learners and their parents to make sure that they get the same choices that the more educated and savvy English speakers are finding?
I mean, I think one thing we're saying is it is absolutely a challenge. We're talking about 100,000 roughly ninth graders who we're trying to make sure get information to, and the reality of providing parents with choices is the challenges that have been discussed here. I think better to have the choices than not, and we mm-hmm. we seek to continue to improve.
Do you have more translators on the sites? Do you have guidance counselors who can speak to parents?
We do have translators. We have an Office of English Language Learners who is responsible for working directly with the Office of School Enrollment, Student Enrollment, around these issues, and I would also just say that around that to the requirements of the new small schools around serving these students. We have put significant effort in this domain. We've had capacity grants around building bilingual programs and other options for students, and we're seeing English language learners in the new small schools earn about 20% more credits than do their colleagues in other schools. And there is a deep commitment on the part of this administration to meet the needs of English language learners. It is a challenge and one that I think we're taking on.
Because originally they were criticized, the small schools, for not taking a fair proportion of English language learners and special education students. And all of you seem to agree that that's evened out now, that it is more proportional or not, Daisy? You're nodding, you're shaking your head.
No, well, one of the issues that we've continued to highlight is that there are a number of small schools that are doing a really good job with ELL students. There are about, you know, two handful of schools, the Internationals Network, that has, you know, opened its doors for ELL students. But the overwhelmingly majority of small schools continue to not have ELL services. So even though the two-year exclusionary policy that existed at the beginning is now no longer in place, what we're seeing is that when parents go into the schools and try to find information about, do you have an ESL program, do you have a bilingual program, they're being turned away and sent to other schools because most small schools still don't have those programs.
I want to go back to another issue that's important to English language learners, which you wrote about in this book, New York City Schools Under Bloomberg and Klein, What Parents, Teachers, and Policymakers Need to Know. Now, we got to say, like, the people in this book have all taken a very critical view of the Bloomberg administration. But, Daisy, you point to test scores for English language learners, and you claim that the city has not really closed the gap between English proficient students, kids who speak English, and the kids who don't. And I've looked at the latest test scores, and it does look as though there have been positive changes that the Bloomberg administration can point to. In 2001, less than 11% of English language learners in elementary and middle school were reaching the state standards on their reading tests. Today, that figure has gone from 11% to 35%. They've also gone up a lot on their math exams, from 36% meeting state standards in 2006 to 68% now. So, Daisy, do you think the city is closing the gap between the English language learners and the kids who speak English?
Yeah, we do recognize and acknowledge some of the progress that that has happened at the elementary school level. I think we still have a lot of work to do to really address the crisis that is happening in the middle school and high school levels. When we look at those same results that you're talking about, only 5% of 8th grade ELLs met ELA standards. And again, you know, we're talking about 5% of L students meeting standards, nowhere near where we need to be. And when we're looking at the graduation rate for ELL students, only 23% mm-hmm. of ELL students graduate from high school. And I think one of the things that's important to note is that graduation rates, while overall are going up in the system, for ELLs we're seeing the opposite story, okay. Where graduation rates are, you know, actually going down.
How does that compare to ELL students in private schools? Do you think that they do better in those types of settings?
What we've seen is that when ELL students receive the help that they need, they actually succeed. Okay. And we've had plenty of examples, even in our public school system, where that is happening.
Right.
So I think it's an issue of recognizing the level of the crisis. I think we give the Department of Education credit for some of the things that they've done. Frankly, I think that response has been at a level of 100, when the crisis that is facing us requires a response of a level of 1,000.
Okay.
Beth, if I may,
sure.
One of the interesting pieces that we're seeing, and I would absolutely agree that there's more work left to be done in working with English language learners. We're by no means satisfied. I think we're continuing to see movement. We'll see what the data shows later today when it's released around mm-hmm. 2008. One of the interesting pieces that we're seeing is that the former English language learners that are currently in high school, and there are about twice as many former English language learners than current English language learners in high school, and those students are having much higher graduation rate than the city graduation rates overall. So as you break down the challenges that are connected with English language learners, there's the students who were still unable to move beyond the NICESLAT test. And then there are the students who are able to graduate out of the English language learner who are some of our best performing students in the city.
We have to wrap up in about a minute, so I want to ask each of you. The state is going to be raising the standards for high school graduation. The Regents diploma is going to be harder to get in the future. And how do each of you think the city is going to need to deal with that? Because Clara Hempel, in the report that you co-edited, it looked as though a lot of our high school graduates wouldn't have made it if we had those higher standards in place now.
I think it's tough, but I'm somewhat cynical. I think that the Regents may well just water down the tests and make them easier to pass.
And Daisy, what do you think?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, I think we do need a very comprehensive blueprint for what it's going to take to help students succeed, particularly the students that now are falling through the cracks, ELL students. And I think just to comment on the previous segment, the Assembly and the Senate really missed a good opportunity to significantly strengthen the school system. And, you know, that's an area where we could have really addressed issues of, you know, parent participation and outcomes for ELL students.
And Josh Thomas is from the DOE. What do you see the city doing very quickly to address the higher standards the state's imposing?
I think it's the next challenge, and I think it's one we're ready for. The eighth grade test scores are going up across the city. We're going to have better prepared students in high school, and we've driven enough empowerment and down towards the schools that they're ready to take this on, and we're prepared to support them.
All right. Thank you, all of you. We'll have to leave it there. This is the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm Beth Fertig in for Brian, and I've been speaking to Clara Hempel of the New School, Josh Thomas is a chief academic officer at the city's Department of Education, and Daisy Avitia of the New York Immigrant Coalition. Thank you all for joining us this morning. Up next, taking aim at advertising.